Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzjobber. On today's show, ticket scalping and robots. What do those two things have to do with each other? Well, you might have had this happen to you at a point in your life. You're trying to get tickets to Taylor Swift, or maybe it's a big sports match and an NFL game, and you stay up all night or you get up early to try to buy tickets right when they go on sale. You know, you're staking out the website, and you sign on only to find that they've been sold out almost instantly and you never had a chance. And now your only options are to buy them on the secondary market for above face value. Now, you might be frustrated by this, and it seems that some in Congress share your frustration, but is the solution worse than the problem, or is this a solution in search of a problem? Well, joining me to discuss this is Anne Hobson, Tech Policy Fellow at the R Street Institute. Anne, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you very much.
So this bill, the BOTS Act, it stands for Better Online Ticket Sales Act. Now, of course, we've seen that legislation that has a nice name doesn't always have a nice outcome. People who are skeptical of government surveillance will always point to the Patriot Act as a law that might not have been so patriotic after all. But let's give this bill a fair hearing and let's discuss it. So, Anne, do you agree that it's a problem that people try to sign on, but all these robots are buying the tickets? I mean, is this something that the government should be dealing with? What do you think of this bill?
So I think bots are only an issue for some concerts. Ticketmaster regularly rolls out a stat that bots buy more than 60% of the most desirable tickets for some shows. But there are some aspects of that that need to be looked at further. First of all, it's most desirable tickets, and it's only some shows. An analysis of a Justin Bieber concert showed that after pre-sales, there was only 8% of the tickets left. And so if bots even took 60% of that, overall, they'd be taking 4% of the total tickets originally available for that show.
So the bots weren't the reason that there was restricted availability. 92% of the tickets were already sold through the whole like VIP glad handing process that I'm sure goes on in the background, that people not familiar or connected to the music industry get involved with that. But really, if you're talking about Justin Bieber, it wasn't the robots, maybe it was just the show. Is it fair to say that the vast majority of Americans who buy tickets to concerts and, you know, sports games, are they not impacted by the bots problem in a noticeable way? Is this only for those really desirable concerts? Is Ticketmaster right, at least in that sense?
Yeah, so it's only for those really desirable concerts. But also, where do those tickets go? They go to, you mentioned VIP clubs, they go to credit card deals and managers and artists. And those managers and artists often turn around and sell those tickets on the secondary market and keep the profit for themselves. So they're actually competing with the bots on the secondary market, which is why you might see some artists pushing this.
So what are the companies doing to combat this already, right? Because we're talking about a bill that would involve government in this, but you've got to wonder, these are websites, they have technology. Anyone who's used the internet long enough has had a situation where they had to prove that they were a human. Maybe it involves looking at a blurry photo of a street address and you type in a few numbers to prove that you're human. I mean, it seems like there are measures, some cybersecurity measures already in place all over the internet to deal with this. Are websites like Ticketmaster doing work already to try to solve this problem themselves? I mean, why are they turning to government?
Yeah, so courts have actually solved this problem in the past. Ticketmaster successfully sued software maker RMG Technologies. And apart from that, there are state laws that deal with this. 30 states have scalping laws, and then 14 states actually ban the use of bots already. In New York, you can get jail time for using bots. So it's unclear why they're bringing this to the federal level, but what it does point to is this growing concern that the government is being used to enforce a private contract, in this case, the terms of services of Ticketmaster, Live Nation, which owns 80 to 85% of the market.
Those long terms and services, we sign them all the time. We very rarely read them. Is there any realistic mechanism for a website like Ticketmaster to enforce against the average person, right? So if I'm just a guy who's good with computers, I create a bot, are they ever really going to catch me? I mean, is that why they're turning to government? Because they just have run out of ways to combat this problem? It's really hard to enforce?
It is unclear how enforceable this BOTS Act is going to be.
So even if government steps in, it might not change the enforcement problem?
Yes, which is why you might see silence on behalf of the secondary market.
Yeah, so that's a good question. websites like StubHub, that's a secondary market website, Viagogo. There are a lot of places that people turn to for sold out events. And it's almost ridiculous to say that anything is sold out these days because of the secondary sales market. Because once the, maybe when you see the term sold out, that means the traditional box office wait in line to buy tickets or sign on immediately to buy tickets from the primary seller, which in many cases is Ticketmaster. But these days, when it says sold out, you just think, oh, well, now I got to go to StubHub. What do those companies think? I mean, this bill is targeted at them in some ways. I mean, if they're using technology to buy up tickets, why are we not hearing an outcry from StubHub, which is one of the bigger companies, the bigger household names when it comes to the secondary sales market? Where's the opposition?
Yeah, it's really unclear where it is, because I think if the FTC does enforce this and it does have teeth, that you are going to see on the margin less tickets in the resale market. And those that are left will possibly be more expensive because they have to take account of the risk of FTC enforcement. So it's surprising to me that they aren't being vocal about this, but there is a moral repugnance factor to this. People have called bots hackers, made them akin to malicious bad actors. But I think that bots are just technology and they can be used in good ways as well. You could technically have them perform in algorithms to better match the buyers of tickets with the sellers.
Yeah, the conventional wisdom is probably that ticket scalping is bad. I mean, the word itself has a negative connotation. It's not, you know, a nice word at all. the synonyms are not so great either. But we think of ticket scalping as bad. It's shady, right? You see people standing near, you know, Madison Square Garden and Penn Station with trench coats, you know, talking to people saying tickets, tickets as they walk out of an elevator or whatever. It's not necessarily illegal. I mean, you said in a lot of states it's perfectly legal, but there certainly is that negative connotation. Is that a hurdle here? Is it that because you're taking something that's already seen as bad by a lot of people and making it more efficient, digitizing it essentially, is that what's turning off lawmakers? I mean, is that why they're so open to Ticketmaster's arguments?
Yes, and you've seen the voice votes go through in the House and the Senate on this bill very easily, because I think that there is that factor. But it's worth mentioning that there are some very clear solutions to this that could be pursued.
Yeah, if not the Bots Act, then what should be done? To the extent that we can agree that if, you know, if someone wants to buy a ticket for a non-outrageous price, that that's a good thing, we should try to make that happen. You know, so what are the solutions if not this?
Yeah, so these vendors could actually implement dynamic pricing for one. So you see that in airlines, but it doesn't have to be for every ticket. It could be just for those top tickets.
Right, like the best seats. And then you can still have some seats that are priced lower.
Yeah, and it can be fixed on the supply side as well. So Garth Brooks is a perfect example of this. He actually will, when tickets sell in a city, he'll introduce more concerts in that city and do that until they all sell out.
So that way he's responding to the exploding demand, and rather than just increasing the prices to restrict the sale, he says, you know what, if they really do love me that much, I'll play a few more concerts. I know Kid Rock has also tried to implement some things to make sure that tickets are available for his fans, because there is that reason why they don't want to price gouge in the first place, right? Because if the secondary sales market is able to buy tickets and resell them for a profit, people might be wondering how, right? Like, why doesn't Ticketmaster just charge what the ticket to the Taylor Swift concert is eventually going to go for? And there's the obvious reputational concern, right? That artist is going to be seen as a price gouger. It's going to impact the reputation among their fans. Are there other reasons, though, that Ticketmaster doesn't just say, you know what, Taylor Swift is really that popular, people will pay $700 or several hundred dollars for a ticket, and that's the way it is, and they'll probably be happy to pay it because they're big fans? Why don't they just do that? And then that would basically eliminate the secondary sales market.
Yeah, it would. And you do see some vendors doing that. Hamilton actually increased the price of its top tickets as well. But another reason why Live Nation prices these tickets lower than their market value is to get complimentary items sold. So parking or food or beverages as well. So I think
it's not just about the chair that they're selling in the venue or the space. It's about all those incidentals. And maybe there's pressure from the people who participate in that aspect of this economy, right? They have an interest in what happens with ticket sales, even if their entire business is offline. You mentioned that the bill hasn't been getting much opposition. Do you think this is just going to go through?
Yeah, I do think it's going to go through. So the House, the first House version was changed in the Senate, and so it has to go back through the House. And I think that it's a pretty easy vote, and we're going to see it in the lame duck.
And how's that going to impact consumers? Because if we assume that this is going to restrict the secondary sales market, are there benefits right now that consumers are enjoying from having that option that they might not even realize? Is there going to be an impact here that you see that will affect people in their daily lives? I mean, people go to concerts all the time. They go to sports games. What should consumers be looking to happen as a result of what you're predicting is that President Obama, before he leaves office, will sign this into law?
Yeah, so I think that another thing that we haven't examined that could be a negative effect is it's going to stall innovation in technology that looks to better match buyers and sellers. That could be better user interfaces, or it could be incorporating dynamic pricing algorithms, as we've talked about.
Because now those things will be under the gun of the FTC. I mean, is this more of a chilling effect argument? Is it that the bill itself, the BOTS Act, doesn't necessarily criminalize innovation, but because government is signaling that they're cracking down on a certain practice, that people are not going to want to push the envelope? I mean, is that the concern there? We talk about that with tech policy all the time, where it's not necessarily the exact wording of a single regulation, but it's the signal that it sends to the business world. Do you see people saying, you know what, I don't want to get involved in trying to make an app that sorts people based on certain characteristics? I don't want to get the FTC. Is that a real concern?
Yeah, so I think the way to look at it is that bots solidifies the way that tickets are sold now. And so other future ways of doing that, we've talked about dynamic pricing, or even Garth Brooks increasing supply, are going to be scrutinized. And I think another way in which it harms innovation is you have these complementary apps like Pogo Seat that will allow you to change your seat within a venue. But because the way the language in this bill is said, it criminalized circumvention of technical measures. And so if Live Nation decides that Pogo Seat's circumventing their technical measures, then it could also still innovation in that area as well.
You bring up dynamic pricing. Are there other solutions to the problem of ticket scarcity other than the BOTS Act that you see on the horizon?
Yeah, so one really cool one is the potential for having virtual reality experiences live within concert venues. So you could be sitting in that front row seat in virtual reality, and you could have your friends also in virtual reality next to you. But basically what that looks like is selling 20,000 tickets, experience-based tickets, that are all sitting in one seat.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's another product, and maybe people will decide they want to experience concerts in a different way after all. Well, we'll certainly be seeing if there's any court battles that result from this law. But for now, I'll take your word for it that it's probably going to pass. And based on how it's implemented, maybe there'll be further things to report for our listeners. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Ann Hobson, Tech Policy Fellow at the R Street Institute. Ann, thanks for joining.
Thank you very much.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.